Hi, welcome to Someone Else's Movie. I'm Norm Wilner. I'll be your host. I'm the senior film writer for Now Magazine in Toronto. I'm also just someone who really can't get enough of discussing film and so has created this entirely new way to spend time doing it. The plan as we go forward is to interview someone, an actor, a filmmaker, a writer, a critic, someone with a vested interest in movies, about a movie that they themselves have no connection to. Not necessarily a new film, can be an old film, a recent theatrical release that's just arrived on disc, an older film that's popping up on Netflix, a classic or a newish classic that's just come back as a special edition. As long as it's available somewhere, somehow to be watched, they can talk about it. So this week, the episode is going to be about something that's readily available on Blu-ray, DVD, and various streaming services, although it's probably fresh enough that it's still rattling around in your memory. That would be David O. Russell's American Hustle, a chaotic comedy from 2013 about a bunch of idiots scamming each other in the name of exposing corruption in the American government. Kind of. It doesn't really matter. The film was nominated for 10 Oscars. Director, picture, screenplay, film editing, production design, costume design, and all four acting categories. Christian Bale was nominated for Best Actor, Amy Adams for Best Actress, Jennifer Lawrence for Best Supporting Actress, Bradley Cooper for Best Supporting Actor. This is actually quite impressive, except that none of these 10 awards were won. American Hustle was 0 for 10, which is kind of rare for a movie with that many nominations. But my guest for this very first edition of the podcast is Anne T. Donahue. She's a writer, she's a comic. She more or less owns Twitter at Anne T. Donahue, and you should find her there if you haven't already. And I knew she was the right person for the Shakedown episode when she selected a movie that I absolutely cannot stand. So here we go. This is Anne T. Donahue. This is American Hustle. This is someone else's movie.
This is how it's done.
This is what happens when you don't know what you're doing, folks.
The best kind of podcasts are the kinds that no one knows what they're doing.
Yeah,
someone who has one.
I blame you. Have a podcast.
I do have a podcast.
Tell us about the podcast.
Me and every other human on earth has a podcast now.
Now, yes.
Officially, you were the last one, and we did it. No, my friend Elizabeth Sankey and I, she's in England. I'm here. We Skype and talk about the first, it's called Pilots. And we talk about the first episode of TV shows.
Okay.
And make fun of it a lot.
So what's your favorite episode that you've done so
far? We've only done three.
Okay.
We did West Wing last time.
Uh-huh.
I came to the conclusion that Aaron Sorkin jerks off to the State of the Union. That's my podcast. So when you say you've messed up, my podcast is, like, we live for that.
I would now suggest you title your podcast Aaron Sorkin Jerks Off to the State of the Union.
He does 100% jerk off to the State of the Union. Oh. So we're off to a good start. I'm Anne T. Donahue, by the way.
I was going to get to this.
I mean, people just thought, maybe they thought I was Kate, and I don't want Kate people thinking Kate's as vulgar.
No. Her accent's different. They'd know right away.
Okay.
This is someone else's movie, and the point of someone else's movie is that I get someone on to talk about a movie that they didn't make, that they have no personal involvement with other than they like it or love it or cherish it or want people to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are to talk about a movie which, as it turns out, Anne T. Donahue really likes and I can't stand. So this should make an interesting test case. The film is David O. Russell's, I want to say Silver Linings Playbook.
I almost said it
badly.
Just now.
I don't know why. It's in my head. The film is American Hustle, David O. Russell's follow-up to Silver Linings Playbook, which some people celebrated and others, like myself, could not bear. So rather than bias you with my awful feelings, we're going to start the format fresh, and I'm going to pretend that I like the movie long enough for Anne to describe it without me butting in.
Okay.
So what is it about the film that made you choose it, first of all?
Well, I think you emailed me about the podcast.
Yes,
and I
my own inciting incident.
And I think we both knew that my first instinct would have been like Romeo and Juliet or Titanic or something. But I think those have been discussed to death.
Not on my show.
Well, I'll be back.
Literally.
What can I tell you? Every week I'll be here triumphing Leonardo DiCaprio masterpiece, starting with, of course, the King and the Man in the Iron Mask. But I chose American Hustle because, it's so new that no one talks about it in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. I had just watched it very recently. And I think that there could be enough conversation topics that it'll keep this podcast interesting.
I think so. The thing that I would bring up about American Hustle, much like Silver Linings Playbook, and even maybe The Fighter, it is a film filled with people I like acting at a pitch that just is nails on a chalkboard for me. Whatever it is about chaos that Russell embraces pushes me away, and I come out just angry.
Were you angry after you saw this movie?
I was angry during.
Oh my God.
It's one of those movies where you just basically, yeah, as much love as I have for every single person involved, I kind of wanted them to fall down a well. Maybe collectively, maybe separately, maybe the film could follow them as they fall down separate wells and then have to sort of work out some kind of elaborate heist plan to get back out of whatever sewer system they find themselves. That would have still been more interesting in watching a movie miss the point of Abscam and reduce it all to peacocking amongst the various characters. Now, obviously, you don't feel that way because you're not crying or trying to throttle me.
No. So, I mean, I'm sorry that you're wrong. I mean, that's so upsetting for you to be wrong on this public podcast.
No, this is the show where I get to be wrong.
You're just always wrong. I loved it. Granted, it should be established that, unlike Norm, I am a basic bitch. I like my basic films. You have the Criterion Collection. You're like, take any of these. And I'm like, I don't know any of these movies. I wish them well. But I was entertained for 2 hours. I was so happily entertained. Just so happily entertained. And I like the characters, like Jennifer Lawrence's character. I like people like that in life. Mm-hmm. So I think watching it on the big screen, also like watching Louis C.K. try to tell his ice fishing story, the wigs that I love. I love the 70s as an aesthetic. I think it's my favorite decade to look at. I think the clothes are exciting. I think it's like the last decade before anyone learned any lessons about how life works. So it's kind of just this hurrah of disaster. And the movie, I mean, can I tell you what it's about? I don't know still to this day, 100%.
This is what I was going to say. If you can, I would be impressed. As I understand it, it's about
Abscam.
Abscam is involved.
Yes.
It is about a long con, let's say.
Yes.
It's a long con movie. It's not a heist picture. I mentioned those earlier. It's not one of those because all of the gerrymandering and scamming and trickery is totally above board surface level. We see everything that happens.
Except at the end.
Except at the very end with the rug being pulled out from under certain characters, but not all of them.
Yes.
I mean, it's a film that plays more or less fair with its lying, which I like. The problem I have with it is that because every single character is so incredibly unappealing to me and pitched at a level of shouting that is well beyond just casually going up to 11. I think the problem I have with Russell's current state of filmmaking, which started, I would say, probably around I Heart Huckabees, and from then on has progressed into louder and more chaotic expanses of cinema, is that there is nowhere for it to go down to. No one ever starts at a normal level. We're already up and running at peak crazy. And so all there is more crazy to pile onto it, because there's no way out other than getting louder and louder and louder. And I find that as a film goer, I just find that wearying and exhausting and murder making.
Oh, and I don't know, maybe it's because of my dad always jokes that we're a family of yellers, and we are. Like, we're very loud talkers. You know me, like, I speak loudly, and I'm around people who are loud, and our family is very loud. Like, as soon as there's a get-together on my dad's side, it's very loud, very, like, over the top. The storytelling is, like, add another thing. So I think watching it felt like I was delving into a sense of familiarity in the way, I mean, on my dad's side, at least. My mom's side's not so much like this, but my dad's side is very much like that in a lot of ways. So it was very comforting to me to watch people interact in this way, because it's very, I don't know. I always joke that where I'm from is the Jersey of Canada and the Long Island of Canada, like Boston of Canada, which is also why I kind of liked the mom and the sister so much in The Fighter, because every time they're like, oh, Boston people are so trashy, I'm like, hey, I am not from Boston, but I feel a camaraderie with these people. So I think watching this movie was some sense of, I liked their survival mandate. I think it was all this underlying stuff that made them shouty and made them that, where if you've gone through, I haven't gone through those things, but I think as somebody who's like, they had to survive, they survived by becoming these these caricatures of human beings.
Yeah, the idea that if you shout someone down, they'll stop bothering you.
Which usually works.
That's true.
Yeah. you didn't go back to bother them.
That's true. My other conflict of it is that I am obviously watching actors having a great time.
They're having so
much fun.
Everyone
is having more fun than I am.
Except for Amy Adams, who apparently David O. Russell yelled at her. Says the interview.
I assume David O. Russell yells at everybody.
I've never met him, but he totally stole my middle initial shtick, and I want that back.
I have met him. He did not yell at me. But he was selling his movies, so I think he was sort of obliged to be on his best
kind of nice, at least.
He's an interesting filmmaker. I prefer his earlier actually funny films. Stuff like Spanking the Monkey and Flirting with Disaster and Three Kings, which are not just three very good films, but three examples of what filmmaking was in the 90s,
right,
that he seized upon and made better in each case. I mean, Spanking the Monkey is your basic indie. Flirting with Disaster is your basic Miramax all-star comedy. And Three Kings is not anything. Three Kings was as much of a breakthrough as anything else released at in the last quarter of 1999, which is just such a fantastic time for cinema. He monologued. But then he took a turn. Then he started making the movies that fascinated him, or rather the movies about characters that fascinated him, rather than telling larger stories. I think that's my problem with him. He's confused the laser focus on individual behavior, the Cassavetes aspect, with an actual narrative. So with American Hustle, there is a story being told, and it's a really big one, and one that very few films have touched on, which is strange.
Yeah.
And stranger still that it should be handled in the way it's handled, because it really kind of leaves the larger story of Abscam completely untouched.
Yeah.
Not that that's what the movie needs to be about.
No.
But, I mean, when you think about it, do you see it as a comedy? Do you see it as a political? Like, what?
Definitely not political. I mean, there are politics in it, but I think that totally different than what political is.
And I think on some level, he's probably right. I think that politics and massive scandals really do boil down to a guy just yelling at his superior.
That's
like on a base level.
That's what politics is.
Yeah. Petty conflicts, individual discord.
Yeah, like I saw it as a comedy. I was in no way nervous watching it. And any nerves were like stifled by like the editing was fantastic. Like when Christian Bale goes home to Jennifer Lawrence and it's like, I was in your boyfriend's car, and it cuts to like Danny Houston holding him like with his tie, and there's like, it's so over the top, it's so funny, like the dancing, the live and let die. It was like a heist comedy, I guess, for lack of a better description. Then again, you are the film person here. I'm just the person sitting here with tea.
You're the promoter. You're selling me on
I'm
this.
Selling you American Hustle.
And it's the kind of movie that I want to buy into. That's the other thing too. Like as an actively uninterested observer in David O. Russell's career, I want to like his movies more. I want to like them somewhat lately, because he's making movies with people that I really like, about stories that I ideally should be involved in or invested in.
Mm-hmm.
American Hustle is a film in which Christian Bale gives a really big Christian Bailey performance.
Totally. He's the character I like the least.
And he's doing less and less of that these days as an actor, so it's fun to watch him be larger than life in an inviting way, as opposed to something like Batman or Terminator, where he's really good at giving you exactly what's needed in an action sequence, or even as a character like Bruce Wayne, playing with the idea of his persona, but the movie itself doesn't allow you to enjoy the performance on the same level because it's always rushing to the next big action payoff.
Right.
American Hustle is, if nothing else, a film that loves acting and is all over the people in it. So you get Bale, you get Lawrence, you get Bradley Cooper, Louis C.K. You get that tiny little cameo from that one actor from Silver Linings Playbook, which we won't spoil for you here, but
Can we not spoil here?
I'd rather not. Yeah, people probably already saw it.
Yeah.
But yes, when that actor shows up, you're just like, oh, of course, I was waiting for him and I didn't even know it.
Which I love.
There are elements about it that feel like a party that I wasn't invited to. I think that's the problem.
Do you feel excluded? Do you FOMO watching things? Like, do you feel like you should have been invited and you were not invited?
I felt like I should have been in on more of the fun. It's weird. The party you weren't invited to is a line that someone came up with for one of the Austin Powers sequels, which is a great way of putting it.
Yeah.
Everyone is having way more fun off camera than they are on camera.
Yeah.
That's not quite the case of American Hustle. Like, there's clearly an infectious energy at work. I just my problem is that every scene has to end with yelling because it starts there. And I couldn't break past the tone. I couldn't break past the aggressive, in-your-face aggressiveness of it. I mean, it doesn't seem to have a reason to be pitched at that level throughout. Although the ice fishing story is a great example of my frustration because it's never going to get to the end of it.
Which
it's
is so great, though.
Oh, that no, I love that. I love that aspect of it. And Louis C.K. is the guy you want delivering that.
Yeah.
That punchline.
Yes.
Of a non-punchline.
Exactly. No, I get what you're saying about the pitch and about them having fun and maybe not inviting you. And I'm sorry you did not get your RSVP Save the Date card like the rest of us did. I wonder if part of it as well, though, is because you watch it, you're a critic in your job. Like, that's your job. Like, you have to, you go to a movie. I saw this movie. I was on a deadline. I just finished it. It was winter. It was like a Sunday evening or something like that. I went alone. It was just such a nice escape. Mm-hmm. I think I saw it a couple times in theaters just because it was during a time where I had all this work and I would be finished at like 10 and I needed to get out of the house. So the movies are the cheapest thing to do.
Sure.
If it's just a ticket. I feel all of my experiences watching it were escapism and to just be like, oh, I just want to watch these people have fun because I'm so tired. And when I bought it and I took it home and I watched it, same thing. So maybe that's also part of it too, because you're watching it from a critical standpoint, whereas I watched it literally only to have fun.
Right.
And for the hair, of course.
Sure. Well, that's it, right? I mean, you can take the pleasure in the costume design and the wardrobe because that's one of the things the film does not excessively but excessively well. It's
so
really,
well
it's jumping on in there to a point where I think I actually did get away with calling it a cavalcade of shouting inside boob. But there are moments where I started as a critic seeing it at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday or Wednesday morning. It was the week before the Toronto Film Critics Awards, so we all had to see everything. And
we're
seeing three or four films a day, and I've already don't like Silver Linings Playbook a lot. And to sit down and go, oh, we're back to that, only it's the 70s now. I think maybe, yeah, that just kept me from enjoying myself any further. But there's also a weird sense of, I mean, I know that this is me being a 46-year-old white guy, but there's a weird sense of exploitation at work in a lot of the fashion choices that only targets the women. And I found myself growing less comfortable with that as it went on.
And that, I mean, that's your call, and that's cool. And I'm a 29-year-old woman who, like, saw that and was like, that's 70s. Like, it really is.
That's like the best of the 70s, and as far as the film's concerned. Like, this is the stuff that it's choosing to highlight. And
yeah, and I mean, though, if you watch 70s programming, like, if you watch Mary Tyler Moore and Rhoda, like, those fashion choices are bang on. Like, that's the decade. The decade was tacky. Like, it was tacky, and people, like, women didn't wear bras. That's cool. That's your call. And, like, synthetics were huge. Leather was huge. Fur was huge. Over-the-top everything was huge. If you watch any Donna Summer videos, if you watch.
That's true. It does look a lot like Soul Train for white
people. Like, it looks, there's, it's very much in that way. And also, when you think about it, like, Jeremy Renner's wife in the film doesn't dress in such an exhibitionist fashion. She's a lot more conservative. So the costumes, I think, reflect mostly the characters than it does women. Because even Amy Adams' Cosmo editors dress pretty conservatively.
I suppose I'm thinking not more of what the film is saying about women, but what Russell's choices are to create further conflict, ugly up the world is the wrong term, but he certainly doesn't paint the 70s as a particularly pretty place. And it was pretty scruffy and ugly.
It was, and in New York especially. That's true. When you think about it, it got a lot worse, too. And it was coming at the tail end of the decade, going into the early 80s when it was a nightmare. So when you think about that as well, I mean, I think it's an interesting... I think it's an interesting movie, first and foremost. But I also think it highlights aspects of North American culture in that time that get a little bit overlooked, like the little stories about people whose, you know, families were fucked up and turned into fucked up people because of that.
Yeah.
And not in a way that glorifies that fucked upness, but it was a thing, like, where by the end, everyone's like, yeah, that happened. It was just like, and I again, there's situations in my family where it's just like, so those were the years that happened. It's like, yep. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. So I think watching it again, I don't know if it made me relate to my grandma or like what, But yeah, those are the observations I've had about it. It's just a very familiar, easy watch for me. It was just such an easy film to watch. Jesse Hawken and I really liked it.
But it doesn't have Mordecai in it.
Mordecai.
That is the insidest joke this podcast may ever record.
Mordecai's been everywhere. He's behind you right now if you're listening.
It's a take on a film. It's a take on the film that isn't... See, this is the thing I find so frustrating about Russell, mm-hmm. is the emotional complexity that he pours in and then leaves out at the same time. Like, there is a massive depth of relationship in that movie between various characters that,
yes.
I feel is touched on briefly, but in a frustrating way, because I just wanted to dig more into that. I wanted to see more about it. The science oven sequence, which everyone remembers,
yeah.
the endless clip about the science oven,
yeah.
is played with such glee by the actors that it broke me out again and started commenting, like, oh, look, people used to say silly things about the microwave device that we all take for granted now. It's like the ending of The Imitation Game, you know, the Turing machines, today we call them computers.
Oh, boy.
And you want to tell the movie to go jump in the lake,
yeah.
because give me a fucking break. We know what it is. We know what a computer is. You don't have to hold my hand and tell me that. The Science Oven sequence is absolutely the best example of the film having fun with our foreknowledge, or rather the rearview knowledge that we bring to it,
mm-hmm.
and still letting the actors play, and I like it, but it lifts out for me because it's only about that in that one moment. It's about, you know, Bale peacocking and Lawrence giving it back to him and just nobody taking anybody else's shit for those 3 minutes that we're trapped in there.
Mm.
But then it goes on for another 2 minutes and I just want to claw my eyes out.
I'm
an awful person is what I'm saying.
You might just not like fun.
I do like fun.
I don't know, though. I mean, listen.
Not the band.
No, the band is not
good.
Who
puts a period in their name? That's silly.
That's a dick thing to do.
That's what you're saying.
Oh,
fun's
my
over
God.
Now.
I can't. I feel old even thinking about the decisions that led to that band being called what it was. But, I mean, I wonder if it is a question of your critics' take. But people, it was a polarizing movie. That's the thing. Mm. It is polarizing. Even now, it's polarizing us right now
just
on the couch.
In space.
You are angry, and you've been yelling at me off of the podcast for, like, you've had to keep cutting it because you've been berating me. It's been very upsetting. But
I'm yelling near you, if anything.
Just saying horrible things about my family, but that's okay. What I wonder why a lot of people, I think, what made it polarizing was that it got so much critical acclaim. That, as even a fan of American Hustle, I will say confused me because it was, you know, the year of 12 Years a Slave. Like, it could, okay, fine, sure. Let's say it was a good movie. Let's, like, get whatever. But we can't talk about this as a serious Oscar contender when you're comparing it to what actually took home the Oscar and
sure.
also the caliber of film that was. I feel like maybe American Hustle would have maybe been a little bit better for you or for a lot of people if it had been released in the summer.
I wonder. I do think that the idea that David O. Russell is an Oscar-winning, like, a performance getter,
yeah.
which is being perpetuated. Lawrence won for Silver Linings Playbook,
mm-hmm.
and both Bale and Melissa Leo took home supporting prizes for their work in The Fighter, which just still, I mean, it's the Academy has a long history of confusing most acting with best acting,
mm-hmm.
and especially in supporting performances, and so that doesn't surprise me that they would win, but it makes me sad because it also sends the wrong message, to my mind, to those actors, because Melissa Leo has gone bigger and bigger and bigger, and Bale with Russell goes bigger and bigger and bigger. Lawrence seems to be doing okay. I like her.
I love Lawrence.
Okay.
She's so smart.
And she is.
She's a very smart person. Also, she has, like, she's got a good balance. Action, comedy, all of it.
Yeah. It's
she's
funny. You can look back at American Hustle, or children of the future will look back and say, oh, that was the movie with Batman and Hawkeye and Katniss.
Yeah.
And Lois Lane.
Yeah.
And I'm missing Cooper.
And
still
Mystique.
And Rocket Raccoon now.
Yeah.
Katniss and Mystique, that's true.
Yeah.
How many Marvel characters?
I could talk about X-Men forever, by the way. I have so many theories about that franchise.
This is one of those things where I wonder if, you know, like the massive success of superhero films as a genre and a blockbuster machinery unto themselves will change the way people look back. You know, it's like watching Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban and realizing
yeah.
that there's a scene with Timothy Spall, Gary Oldman, and David Thewlis, and it's Mike Leigh's repertory company in a children's effects movie and still being really good.
Yeah.
But the idea that the Harry Potter films are a gateway drug for kids to discover
good acting.
Good acting, but the entire history of British cinema over the last 30 years is
That makes
sort of
sense,
stunning.
Though. Yeah, those... Oh, God. The action franchises right now are just, like, a hotbed for culture. It's, like, honestly, mm-hmm. like, everybody, if you're relevant in any way... Like, Oscar Isaac being cast as Apocalypse?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Work. I can see it.
Yeah.
And in a Star Wars movie.
Yeah. So I saw most... He was also great in A Most Violent Year, if I do say so myself.
Mm-hmm. Used beautifully. It's one of those... I mean, there's a film that uses its 70s, 80s situation...
You're right.
Really elegantly, I think, in the just the sheer use of Oscar Isaac, who kind of looks like Al Pacino a little bit, and then
yeah.
more so when you put him in the camel's hair coat, and it's like watching Michael Corleone make the wrong choices, but really fast.
Yes.
And what it does with Chastain, too, is just marvelous. Using her as a fashion icon of that era, but also as her own character. You definitely get that sense with what Lawrence is doing, even though she only has a few scenes compared to what Amy Adams is in. But Adams... I don't know. She feels too contemporary to me to sell it.
Well, I agree. I love Amy Adams. I think she's awesome. And I think she's she's the best. But
I will see her in anything.
Of course, for sure. There was something about like when you're watching the movie, I'd be most excited. Every scene that Jennifer Lawrence was in, she stole. Danny Houston stole a lot too, I find. Like, just even though he's very quiet, it was like, you are such a, yeah, like I could buy you as a mob guy. Like, it was when I saw him, I was happy to see him because I loved him in Boardwalk.
Jack Houston.
Sorry, not Other Danny Houston. Yeah. Sorry.
I was suddenly going, wait, how much regard do I have for this film?
And I was just like, why isn't he nodding in agreement with me? Jack Houston, I thought, was so great.
And with his whole face.
His whole face.
Which is nice.
It was wonderful.
Always nicer.
I was so happy. But Amy Adams, it was like a split where she was good in the movie, let's be serious.
No.
But it wasn't, maybe just, was it the accent thing that threw me? Actually, I'm going to give you this. I don't know what was up with her accent. Why did it keep going on and off? And why would sometimes she talk in it to Christian Bale and sometimes not? He knows she doesn't have an accent. What's going on there?
Yeah.
What is happening with that?
That was one of the things I think it's intentionally wobbly.
Oh.
But I don't know how intentionally. Oh. I think that her performance is intentional.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the movie knows it, which is one of those things where, you know, is this just rather than re-loop a scene and get all the other sound mixing involved, because that would be a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Any multi-character yelling sequence is going to be hell to recut and reshoot or just loop. Maybe Russell just went with the best take at any given moment. And it's one of those things where I'm sure if I listen to the commentary track, everyone would talk about how incredibly well-engineered and perfectly calibrated it was. But it doesn't feel that way when you're watching it. And it doesn't... That element doesn't feel chaotic in an intentional way, in a way that a lot of the other chaos feels intentional. There are moments where I just need to know the movie knows what it's doing. And yeah, her accent and her entire character, really, in relationship to Bale and to Cooper, is one thing that I was never fully convinced of. And I think maybe that's her, too. Like, she's working that angle.
And she's not, yeah, like, she's... I mean, we could be just not giving it enough credit in the sense of, like, maybe it was...
Oh, I'm sure I'm not.
It was probably conning us in the long run as well. When you think about it, like, maybe Amy Adams, like, she doesn't even love Christian Bale in it, for all we know. Like, maybe it's that good where we find out it was all a dream.
I mean, it is the kind of movie that you can see told from any of three or four different perspectives.
Yes.
And, again, it's Russell, so he has to have all of them. He has to just cram everything into the frame and keep it going and overstuff it to the point where I'm just tired. By the end of it, I mean, wrung out and exhausted by all the acrobatics that are required, both emotional and technical, to get us through that movie.
But you're
invigorated by it.
I really loved it. Like I said, I saw it a couple times and I bought it. And I think Jeremy Renner's performance is super underrated. I thought he was super charming as this poor sucker, basically, who just gets fucked. Like, it's so sad to watch in the montage of them, like, get, like, bribing the people and Jeremy Renner truly believing that he was helping his community. And I love Dolly. I loved his wife. I feel like Dolly half the time. I feel like Dolly and I feel like Rosalind.
Just quietly doing your best in a given situation.
And laugh. Yeah, being very quiet and subdued all the time. And
I don't get that from you.
No, I'm just very quiet, and I don't... Talking even now, I'm very drunk to try and get these words out. And
It took a lot.
Yeah.
We had to watch the movie four times.
You had to watch it. I acted it out for you and Kate, all of the parts.
I do appreciate that, because I'd forgotten that Renner had his... as much presence as he did.
And that hair.
And he's one of those actors who, strangely, it's not that he's not charismatic, but he knows when to fade. Like, he's a recessive performer in this film. He just gets shouted down by everybody else, but it's not a losing choice. He just chooses to withdraw a little bit as a performer. He does the same thing in the first half of Kill the Messenger before all the real heavy paranoia stuff kicks in. And it's much more interesting because watching him think, which, you know, The Bourne Legacy, underrated performance there because it's mostly running and jumping, but he's really good at thinking his way through those runs and jumps.
Yeah.
It's something that I had forgotten about Renner.
Well, the especially town in this film was a perfect example of how he's good at thinking in the town. True. I love that movie. That movie, I'll come back for to talk about. I love that movie so much. But yeah, Jeremy Renner is actually, contrary to his Golden Globes jab at Jennifer Lopez's boobs, is a thinking actor, at least. He puts his brain to work there. Yeah.
Well, the Golden Globes, everybody drinks.
Everybody is.
That's why the Golden Globes shouldn't be taken any more seriously ever.
Yeah, everybody's hammered there.
It's not just any more seriously than they already are, but ever. They shouldn't be taken seriously, period.
Yeah, let's just have fun. That's why Amy and Tina don't give a shit. They're laughing.
That was the appeal of it. Watching people giggle as the world... Well, they are, you know, some people just like to watch the awards shows burn to bring it all back to The Dark Knight.
I mean, we can talk about The Dark Knight as well, but... Yeah, I mean...
Hair's better.
Hair's
Everyone's better. Hair is better.
I love the hair in American Hustle. Mine is Bradley Cooper's. The disco scene is amazing. It's... I don't know. I mean, you're... Sorry, I've taken over. Ask me questions.
That is the point of this podcast. It's for you. If there is an aspect we haven't mentioned, by all means, let's talk about the hair.
I mean, I could talk about the hair for a long time. It's just ostentatious.
Yes, it was clearly very heavily paid for and worked over.
Oh, my Lord. I can't believe the comb-over sequence, but I do feel like that every day when I do my own hair. That's how I feel.
That's horrible.
I mean, look like that, though. You're looking at my comb-over right now.
What has the world done to you?
I live a stressful life. People say they don't like American Hustle. It's very hard.
I knew it would be my fault in the end. it's that kind of fake vanity in a weird way to let Christian Bale play ostentatiously bald.
And fat.
And ridiculously so. Yeah. And bald and fat. And we all know he's really Christian Bale. He, you know, for the last time, their last collaboration, he lost all the weight and Daffy Ducked himself up and was a psychotic skeleton in The Fighter. Now he's paunchy, he's puffy, he kind of looks like Neil Hamburger pretending to be Andy Kaufman. And it's a great opening because it lets us into him and his character's world, the vanity and the ridiculous puffery. But at the same time, it lets you know, it's all right, Christian Bale, you've seen him. He's going to be okay.
I mean, I don't really get that vibe. Acting-wise, he'll be okay? He'll be good. He'll sell this. Sorry, I didn't feel like I was sure he was going to be okay or not. Like, he was using a lot of glue on that head. I think Christian Bale loves playing dress-up.
Yeah.
I think that's his favorite part of this job. Also yelling at people like, wow, good for you. I'll never forget that.
I have interviewed him in a group. I was at a round table for the Dark Knight junket.
Yeah.
And watched what Christian Bale's life must be like all the time, which is that he came into the room and three or four of the journalists there, American idiot journalists, sorry guys, you know who you are, didn't realize he was Welsh. And so he says, oh, hi, everybody. Speaking in his normal accent. And people thought he was kidding. And for about 45 seconds, and I think I still have the audio somewhere, for 45 seconds, there is an incredibly uncomfortable space that we all find ourselves in where he is legitimately trying to convince these people that he's Welsh. And they think he's having them on.
Oh, my God.
And finally it settles down and we have a proper conversation. But it is just...
the worst thing you've ever heard in your life.
If that's your life, is Christian Bale constantly going onto sets and not being taken seriously for a minute or two, his life must be hell. But I can totally see him exploding at somebody, although maybe not on a Terminator movie.
That seems a bit weird.
It seems a bit unnecessary. But yeah, if the guy's in your light, you know, checking his messages while you're trying to emote about the future of mankind, whatever. This film, I don't get the sense he blew up at anybody...
No,
out
but
of character?
I also can't imagine him having had fun. He seemed like the only, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can imagine Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence and Jack Huston and Amy Adams and, like, having a blast. But there's something about Christian Bale that I think he would hate Twitter the most. Like, I think he would hate tweeting a, like, if you were to think of celebrities as people who would, like, who would love live tweeting an award show?
Right.
Him and Russell Crowe would hate it the most.
Russell Crowe would just count off the number of times he almost stood up to receive an award and then sat back down again.
Russell Crowe is insane.
It's Twitter. I think that Twitter is, well, as you've demonstrated, as I hope to prove, it makes us our best selves.
I hope so.
Or our worst selves, but you get to see who a person really is if they're running their own account.
Well, that's absolutely accurate. Case in point, so many mistakes celebrities have made just talking in life. You know what I don't think was a mistake? This movie. I thought it was amazing.
Way to bring it back home.
You're welcome.
It's a film that as opposed to Silver Linings Playbook, which is a movie I would happily never watch again, mm-hmm. American Hustle is one of those things that tugs at me a little bit, which is why I was kind of glad that you brought this up for the show. It's a movie that I wish I liked more. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of this show, in addition to eliminating movies that I already agree with, is to take that time and explore a film, even if we're making jokes about people's hairlines and side boobs, to explore it in a way that maybe I wouldn't be able to do on my own. As a stuffy film critic who sits in dark rooms by himself alone with his giant coffee and grumbles his way through David O. Russell's work, which I enjoy that part of it.
Yeah.
But certainly, I started this because I kind of want the idea of basking in other people's opinions or just soaking in someone's ideas for 30 or 40 minutes or however long it's been. We will now check the clock and realize, oh, 6 minutes, that's it.
It's been 4 minutes.
But, this is good. This is what I want the show to be. I want to be told that I might be wrong, but in a good way, in a delicate way. So thank you for being gentle with me.
Oh, of course. Well, also, the thing about opinions is you're probably not going to change somebody else's just by saying that you like a thing.
That's true.
So it's better to have a discussion.
But isn't it better to talk about something you like rather than something you hate?
Oh, it is.
I do that anyway.
Sometimes talking about things you hate, though, can be the funniest conversations.
Sure.
Like, I mean, I'm trying to think of something that I saw recently that I hated. I don't know, actually. I choose my films, I choose my movies pretty, I just want to basically be entertained. Two Guns I didn't enjoy. Hmm. I took myself to Two Guns one day.
Okay.
Don't recommend it.
I kind of like Two Guns.
Really?
Well, that's next week's show.
Oh!
I did like it. It's one of those things where it kind of, I went in expecting very, very little.
Mm-hmm.
And, because, first week of August kind of action movie release, those tend to be
sleepers.
Well,
as in I fell asleep in it.
Yeah, they tend to be a warning to the audience. It's just like, well, we didn't want to launch this in a big window, so we'll just throw it out of here. But yeah, I did not mind it. So maybe if you're interested, go rent Two Guns. But first, rent American Hustle.
Yeah.
So you can be, up on the conversation.
And you can also, we can talk about things that are cool and tell Norm that he's wrong.
Sure, you can pile on us on the internets. By the time this podcast happens, by the time this goes live, we will have the Twitter account. We will have the website, which I will discuss in the closing statement because I haven't actually finalized those yet. But this is what happens when you start a project. I blame Chris Hardwick for saying, oh, people ask me, how do you do a podcast? Just do one. Fine, I hope you're happy.
He's doing it.
He's doing it.
Hooray.
Badly, probably.
It's fine.
You guys can tell me. Feedback is appreciated. Let's try to use our words. I don't want my house egged. But David O. Russell, if you're listening, if you want to egg the house, I guess you can. I'll allow it. No charges will be pressed. So my thanks to Auntie Donahue, who you can find on the Twitter at Auntie Donahue and all over the internet and the paper world.
You can't get, I'm everywhere on the internet. I live there. I'm like a squatter on the internet.
This is our lives.
Your trippy, I've been trying to get evicted. Too bad. I live there. It's my house.
You change your IP every 24
hours. Every 24 hours. You don't know me. I am Hawkeye.
And there, with the Jeremy Renner reference, here we are again. Or was it a different Hawkeye? Were you talking about The Last of the Mohicans?
I was thinking of Alan Alda.
Oh. And there you have it. That was the very first episode of Someone Else's Movie. My profound thanks to Ann Donahue. You can find her on Twitter at Ann T. Donahue. You can find me on Twitter at Norm Wilner and online at NowToronto.com, where I write about movies more or less constantly. You can also find this podcast on Twitter at Semcast, S-E-M-Cast, because Someone Else's Movie has too many characters for a handle, and on the web at SomeoneElsesMovie.com. I'd also like to thank Jamie Dew, Matt Brown, Matt Price, and Jason Gorber for their invaluable assistance getting this ball rolling. They know what they did. And thank you for your patience. This is a bit of a rough start, I'm sure, but if you come back, I promise we'll do a little better next time. Thanks very much, and take care.